Imagine this scenario. Someone you know, maybe a neighbor, starts complaining about you. To every government agency they can think of. Your business sign, your car parked on the street, the sidewalk. Even claims you lied on your driver's license application.
Wow.
They flood departments with public records requests about you. Just relentlessly digging. It causes you significant emotional distress. It sounds an awful lot like stalking, doesn't
it? Yeah, on the surface, it really does. You can see why someone would feel that way.
Okay, let's dive deep into this. Because in the world of open government law, that line between, let's say, aggressive citizen action and actual criminal harassment, it can be surprisingly blurry.
It really can.
Today, we're unpacking a truly fascinating Florida case, Curry v. State.
Ah, yes, Curry.
Yeah.
A really significant one for this area.
Right. Our mission here is to understand why, in this specific, very strange instance, a court ultimately ruled that this barrage of complaints, admittedly weird and obsessive, is how the court kind of put it, did not legally count as aggravated stalking under Florida law. It's a deep dive that really highlights the incredibly robust protections around a citizen's right to interact with their government, even when maybe their motives aren't exactly pure.
And for those of you who follow open government law closely, this case is just essential. It really gets into how fundamental constitutional protections bump up against criminal statutes. It underscores just how high that bar is for criminalizing citizen interaction with government. That's a point of huge significance.
Definitely. So let's set the stage. The players, Paul Curry and Andrew Nowicki, and Nowicki's cousin, Jacqueline DiCarlo. They all lived on the same property in Florida.
Right. Curry moved in around November 95. DiCarlo lived in a separate cottage nearby.
Things were okay for a bit, but then Andrew Nowicki died unexpectedly in March 1996.
Yes, and that seems to be the trigger.
Exactly. After that loss, the relationship between DiCarlo and Curry just disintegrated, completely fell apart.
It escalated quickly.
Yeah, it did. By June 1996, just a few months later, DiCarlo got an ex parte temporary injunction against Curry.
Which means Curry wasn't even there for the initial order, right? It's for immediate protection.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that temporary order, it later became permanent, got modified a couple of times too in 97 and 98. So DiCarlo was clearly trying to use the legal system to create distance.
And it's important to note, Curry mostly did comply with the physical parts of those orders. After a 97 order, he stayed away from her home physically.
Okay.
And crucially, he never verbally threatened her directly. This wasn't your typical, you know, physical following or threatening calls scenario.
Right. So no direct threats, mostly keeping his distance physically because of the injunctions.
Yeah.
But here's where it gets really interesting, right? Curry's approach shifted.
Completely. His focus turned to this relentless campaign, but channeled through government agencies. At the trial, Curry himself admitted making at least 40 public records requests about DiCarlo.
40?
At least 40, and also filing about 40 complaints against her with all sorts of government bodies.
40 complaints and 40 public records requests. That's an astonishing amount of activity.
It really is. The scope was huge.
Can you give us some examples? What kind of things was he complaining about?
Oh, absolutely. With the city of Stewart, it was like a laundry list, a business sign violation, an obstructed sidewalk. And get this, he actually went out with a tape measure.
A tape measure, seriously.
Yeah. Measured the city's right-of-way himself, claimed he was worried about school kids, but, you know.
Okay, well, what else?
He reported a car parked on the sidewalk, claimed DiCarlo didn't have the right occupational license for her tarot card reading business, complained that the place she worked, Osceola Street Herbs, was improperly using Incorporated in its name.
So really digging into the administrative details.
Deeply. And here's a key point for later. The city of Stewart actually found some merit in a few of these complaints.
Oh, really? Like which ones?
Like the sidewalk obstruction and an issue with an inoperable car on the property. So some of his complaints, however motivated, did point out actual, albeit maybe minor, violations.
Huh. That definitely adds a layer of complexity, doesn't it?
It absolutely does.
But he didn't just stop with the city of Stewart, right? You said various agencies.
Not at all. He went much wider. He contacted the Department of Highway Safety and Motor Vehicles, the DMV.
About what?
Alleging DiCarlo lied about her address on her driver's license application.
Okay.
And he was persistent. He actually traveled to Tallahassee, the state capital, to talk to the inspector general about it.
Wow, he really went the extra mile on that one.
He did, and it led to DiCarlo being asked to update her address. Then he also reported her to the Martin County Sheriff and the school board.
Sheriff and school board, what for?
Alleging she made false statements on her driver's license and her job application. He was pushing for a perjury investigation.
Perjury? That's serious.
Very. And he even went to the city of Vero Beach complaining she didn't have an occupational license for work she did there at a psychic bookstore.
It's just... It's relentless. And then the public records of requests on top of all that.
Exactly. And one specific request really stands out. He asked to inspect all the Stewart Police Department records about DiCarlo's emergency use cell phone.
The phone she got because she felt threatened by him.
Precisely. The police had given it to her because of the situation.
So it's easy to see why DiCarlo testified that all this caused her substantial emotional distress. I mean, who wouldn't be distressed?
Completely understandable. And, you know, given that sheer volume, that persistence, even without direct physical contact or threats, it's maybe not that surprising that a jury did convict Curry of aggravated stalking.
Right. They heard all this and thought, yeah, this crosses the line.
But that conviction naturally was appealed. And that's where the legal interpretation gets really interesting.
Okay, so this brings us to the core legal issue. How did Florida's aggravated stalking law define harassment in a situation like this? We're talking section 784.048.
Yes, the one. Section 784.048, Florida statutes, as it was in 2000. For aggravated stalking, it says someone, after an injunction is in place, has to knowingly, willfully, maliciously, and repeatedly follow or harass another person.
Follow or harass. Okay.
But the key term here was harass. How does the law define that?
Yeah.
The statute in subsection 1A defines harass as engaging in a course of conduct directed at a specific person that causes substantial emotional distress in such person and serves no legitimate purpose.
Ah, serves no legitimate purpose. That sounds critical.
Absolutely central. That phrase became the linchpin. If the conduct served any legitimate purpose, legally, it wasn't harassment under this statute.
Well, okay, so it's not just about the distress caused, it's about the purpose of the action.
So precisely. And then there's the definition, of course, of conduct.
Okay, what's that?
Subsection 1B defines it as a pattern of conduct composed of a series of acts over a period of time, evidencing a continuity of purpose. Standard stuff. But then there's this crucial sentence, especially for us interested in open government.
Uh-huh.
It explicitly states, constitutionally protected activity is not included within the meaning of course of conduct.
Okay, so the law itself carves out an exception for constitutional rights.
Exactly. It gives examples like picketing or protests, but makes it clear the list isn't exhaustive. Any constitutionally protected activity is excluded.
Gotcha. Before we get to how the court applied all this, what was the original idea behind this stalking law? Why did the legislature create it back in 92?
Good question. It was really meant to fill gaps in existing criminal law. The idea was to criminalize conduct that wasn't quite assault or battery, but was still deeply threatening, you know, to protect victims before something worse happened.
So more about preventing direct threats or harm.
Yes. The legislative history suggests stalking still implied some kind of contact, direct or indirect, that made the victim feel personally unsafe or imminently threatened. Curry's actions, being channeled almost entirely through government agencies, didn't quite fit that original mold.
Right. So the jury convicted him, but the appellate court had to look closely at these definitions. How did they untangle it? Why did they reverse the conviction? It still feels, you know, counterintuitive.
It does feel that way emotionally, but legally, the court focused strictly on the statute. They found two main independent reasons why Curry's actions didn't legally qualify as harassment under that specific law.
Okay, what was the first one?
The first reason goes straight back to that phrase we highlighted, serves no legitimate purpose.
Right.
The court made a really critical finding here. They essentially said a report made to a government agency about something within that agency's area of responsibility automatically serves a legitimate purpose under the stalking law.
Automatically. Regardless of why the person made the report. Even if it was pure spite.
Exactly. Regardless of the reporter's subjective motivation, this is a huge point for open government advocates and users. The court basically said, the act of reporting a potential violation to the correct agency has a legitimate purpose in our system of governance.
Oh.
And remember how some of Curry's complaints were actually found to have merit by the city?
Yeah, the sidewalk and the car.
The court pointed to that, too. It kind of bolstered their conclusion that these weren't just baseless accusations. They related to actual governmental functions and regulations reinforcing the legitimate purpose. They weren't judging his motives, but the nature of the interaction with the government.
So using the official channel, made the purpose legitimate in the eyes of this law. That's one pillar. What was the second reason?
The second reason was even broader, hitting on that constitutional protection we mentioned.
Ah, the constitutionally protected activity exclusion.
Precisely. The court found that Curie's complaints and reports to all those government entities, that was constitutionally protected activity.
How so? Which rights specifically?
It falls under the fundamental right to petition the government for redress of grievances.
Okay, the right to petition. I know that's in the First Amendment.
It is, and it's also in the Florida Constitution, Article 1, Section 5. And this right has incredibly deep roots. We're talking way back.
Like how far back?
The court in Curie actually mentioned a petition from English leaders way back in 1013 to Ethelred the Unready.
Wow. Okay, so ancient history.
Truly ancient. And importantly, while it started maybe focused on courts, the Supreme Court has made it clear this right applies to petitioning all branches and departments of government.
So administrative agencies, law enforcement?
All included. The city of Stewart, the DMV, Sheriff Curie contacting them was seen as exercising this fundamental right to petition.
Okay, but what about his motivation? The court called him weird and obsessive with more than a tinge of spite. Doesn't that matter?
According to the court in Curie and drawing on established precedent, no, it doesn't strip away the constitutional protection.
Really?
Yeah. They explicitly stated that his unsavory motivation did not cancel out the constitutional protection for his conduct of petitioning the government. They even cited a major Supreme Court case on this point.
Which one was that?
Eastern Railroad President's Conference v. Nowhere Motor Freight, usually just called NOW.
Right, Nowhere.
Yeah.
What's the takeaway from that case, briefly?
Nowhere basically established that people and businesses have a First Amendment right to petition the government, even if their goal is anti-competitive or purely self-interested or, you know, designed to hurt someone else through government action. The motive behind the petitioning doesn't make the petitioning itself illegal or unprotected, as long as it's genuine petitioning.
So Curie's personal animosity didn't negate his right to complain to the city or the sheriff?
Legally speaking, no. His actions were seen as petitioning, which is protected, end of story, for the purposes of the stalking statute's course of conduct definition.
This raises a huge question then, doesn't it? How does this ruling impact how we think about citizen engagement, open government, versus, you know, the potential for abuse? Where are the limits?
It's a fundamental distinction the court drew, and it's vital for understanding open government principles. The court basically separated direct contact that threatens personal safety, that the original target of stalking laws, from actions channeled through government agencies.
Okay.
When you file a complaint or a public records request, you're using a designated socially acceptable forum. The government is the intermediary. It's not the same kind of direct personal threat, even if the outcome is distressing for the subject of the complaint.
So the channel matters a lot.
Immensely.
Right.
This case powerfully reinforces how robust the right to petition and access public records really is. It says these rights are protected even if the person using them has hostile or arguably malicious motives.
Which is key for government accountability, right? You don't want agencies gatekeeping based on perceived motive.
Exactly. The channels have to stay open and broad. Now, this doesn't mean someone like DiCarlo has zero recourse.
Right. What else could be done?
Well, the court noted that civil lawsuits, tort actions might still be possible. Things like malicious prosecution. If you could prove Curie knew the complaints were baseless and brought them just to harm her. Or maybe defamation, if false statements damaged her reputation.
So other legal avenues, just not criminal aggravated stalking.
Correct. The criminal stalking statute, because it potentially restricts speech and petitioning, has to be interpreted very narrowly. It just wasn't the right tool for this specific conduct, according to the court.
It really highlights that principle of strict construction of criminal laws, especially when constitutional rights are in play.
Absolutely. You need a very clear match between the conduct and the crime's definition. And here, the constitutional protection element meant there wasn't a match.
So wrapping this up, what we learned from Curie v. State is, well, it's complex. While someone's actions might cause very real, substantial distress, the law draws a bright line when those actions involve fundamental rights, like petitioning the government or accessing public records.
Mm-hmm.
Even if the motivation is, as the court said, less than pure, weird, and obsessive, spiteful the channel used, the fact it went through the government was the deciding factor. It shielded the actions from being criminal stalking.
It's a powerful case. It really underlines just how broad that right to complain to government agencies and access records is. It has to be for accountability. It's a testament, really, to the strength of those First Amendment principles in our legal system, even when faced with, frankly, uncomfortable facts like these.
It definitely gives you a lot to think about. Where is that line between legitimate citizen engagement, even aggressive engagement, and something that crosses into harassment? If you're passionate about open government, does Curry make you think, yes, access must be this broad no matter what? Or does he make you question the balance, you know, when personal animosity seems to be the main driver? How do we ensure accountability without enabling abuse through these channels? Something to really chew on.